Hey everyone, I'm Dale Kulis, pinch hitting for John Roberts today, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Berkshire Hathaway podcast. Today in the studio, we have on realty expert John Brodeen, and he'll be talking with us today, right after this.
What would tomorrow look like if you sold your house today? Maybe you'd move to a new city, or a new country. Maybe you'd pick up birding, or birdies. You could get into wine, not that into wine. Or skiing. Warmer skiing. Or maybe you'd spend more time doing nothing at all. When you're ready for whatever comes next, we'll be ready to help you get there. Berkshire Hathaway Home Services.
All right, we are back. Welcome. I'll try to do my best John Roberts impression.
Yeah.
The one, the only, John Brodeen.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. How are you?
Good John Roberts voice. Yeah. Good radio voice.
Oh, God. I don't think a million of me could match that.
I can't do it either.
How are you doing today, John?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad. It's been a while since I saw you.
It's
good to be back here. For always love doing the Berkshire Hathaway podcast. Big happenings lately? Still keeping me up with the F1 world?
Yeah. Still keeping up. I watched last weekend.
I only got halfway through the race, so I've still, it's been a busy week. I've yet to finish but at least the first part, like three retirements in like the first half hour or so.
Yeah. I always like watching, but I always root for a little shakeup, if you know what I mean, from the usual. I'm not going to spoil anything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think I may know who you're talking about. Just seeing how those things just get all the, especially when you get those early retirements, like lap one or so.
Yeah.
I almost freaked out. I felt bad for the Japanese home crowd because I saw it was an RB that crashed. I'm like, oh, no, please don't say that's Tsunoda.
Yeah.
Because that happened.
He didn't, though.
No, it was the other RB, Ricardo.
Yes.
Yeah. Because last year, that's what happened in Mexico with Sergio Perez. First turn and just deflated the hometown Mexico crowd.
Right. And Alex Albon crashed too in that first lap too. I think he's from the Philippines or something like that.
Oh gosh, yeah it was. A little bit of a heartbreaker there. I can't wait to see how it wraps up. But I guess, you know, speaking of, just all kinds of moving and shaking. There's a lot of stuff going on in the realty side of moving and shaking. Like, how do realtors decide how to price a home? I can only imagine all the things how that shakes about.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion about this. Some people think that realtors like control the prices in the market, and if prices are going up and homes are becoming unaffordable, it's because of the realtors, and that's not true. It's because of the market. It's because of supply and demand. Some of the common misconceptions that I hear are, like, a homeowner will think that because their neighbor's house sold for this much, then their house, because their house has something that the neighbor's house doesn't have, it should be worth more. So I'm going to talk about how we as realtors actually do value homes, and it's very similar to what an appraiser is going to do. Of course, when you sell your home, it usually has to appraise. The bank has to make sure it's worth what the buyer has agreed to pay for it. And if not, usually it results in a renegotiation of the price. So the most important things when I'm trying to figure out how much a home is worth, the most important thing is going to be the sold comps. In order for a home to be a comp, it has to be a similar size, similar style, and similar year built. So your neighbor's house that sold might not actually be a comp for your home at all. An appraiser might not be able to use it, and I might not use it either. If it's not the same style, size, or year built. Usually I want, like if your house is a ranch, I only want to use ranch style homes. If it's a split level, only going to compare it to split levels. Because these homes sell at different styles, sell at different price per square foot. So with size, I usually want it to be within a couple hundred square feet of your subject property. When I refer to subject property, that's your house that I'm trying to figure out the value for. If it's a unique home and there's not very many comps out there, I'll broaden that a little bit. But if you broaden it too much, you know, a 3,000 square foot house is likely going to, even if they're the same year built, is going to sell at a lower price per square foot than a 2,000 square foot house. Smaller homes typically sell at a higher price per square foot naturally.
Do you ever get into any situations where it could be like, say, you know, maybe someone who's doing really well has a bit more custom or bespoke architecture to their home that's not your usual common case? Oh, geez, how do I compare this to something on the market?
Yeah, the more unique it is, the more challenging it is to do a CMA on it. And then that's where you'd have to really rely on your skills at making adjustments, especially if you can't find anything that's, you know, on a similar level. And then year built is going to be important as well. Usually I want it to be within like 10 years of the year built of the subject property. Newer homes, you might get even a narrower window because, you know, a 2019 built home is going to be, it's going to seem a lot newer than a 2009 built home. But when you're looking at a 1969 versus a 1959, that might not be that big of a difference. So that's how I qualify previous sales to be comps, or if they're comps or if they're not comps. So then what I'm going to do is I'm going to plug those comps into a CMA, and I'm going to make adjustments for any differences. So if there's a difference in the above ground square feet, I'm going to make an adjustment. If there's a difference in the below ground square feet, I'm also going to make an adjustment. Usually I adjust less for below ground square feet and a little bit more for above ground square feet, because the below grade square footage is worth less than above grade square footage. If you see a home that's all on one level, or if it's a two-story on a slab or something where there's no basement.
I said, do you run into that much up here? It seems most people I know up here usually have basements.
Usually, yes. But it's becoming a little bit more common with building. So those will almost always sell at a higher price per square foot. So if I'm doing an analysis on a home that has no basement that's on a slab, I'm going to try to find other homes that don't have basements. That's really probably the only accurate way to do it. I'm going to adjust for the number of bedrooms and bathrooms. Bathrooms are much more important when it comes to value than bedrooms are, because bedrooms are just, you know, studs and sheetrock and walls and a closet and a window. Where bathrooms are much more expensive. You know, a lot of different plumbing components in a bathroom that makes it much more expensive to add a bathroom than it is to add a bedroom.
And I can only imagine, too, where you get, you run into some people that really go all out with their bathrooms. I've you know, just vacationing at various friends or families over the years that have like jacuzzis or things of that nature in there.
Yep, definitely. So like, that's something where we're going to make adjustments. Sometimes if you go crazy with your bathroom, you're not going to get dollar for dollar back what you spent. So like, especially I see this on basement bathrooms. I would encourage all the people out there who are thinking about doing renovations, don't go crazy on your basement bathroom. If you're going to go in with and do a higher end bathroom, make it be your upstairs bathroom or your master bathroom or something like that. Basement bathrooms, I would go a little bit more budget friendly. So you're more likely to get your money back out of that. Another big thing is the basement finished or not? This is something we'll adjust for. How new and nice is the basement finish? If a basement was finished just last year, that's going to get, you know, that's going to have more value than a basement that's pretty old and outdated and that hasn't been touched since like the 80s, right? So garage stalls is another big one. Adjusting for a different number of garage stalls, attached versus detached garage. Is the garage finished? Is it heated? Is it a newer garage? Is it an older garage that needs to be like bulldozed? You know, so these are all factors that we're going to make adjustments for. How updated is the interior? How aesthetic? How nice? How on trend is the interior? Kitchens, bathrooms, carpets, paint colors, light fixtures, all these things that'll make a home feel move-in ready and nice and new.
It's interesting you're running down these lists of things. I'm having some flashbacks to some just like home and garden shows, seeing people doing like the custom tours, and it just kind of just one of the random questions that popped in my head is, what's the biggest garage you've had to do a value at? Like how many cars was it? Did they claim it could fit? That's just a random question where it's like, I've heard of three-car garages, even sometimes driving by, well, that's got to be a four-car garage. What would you say would be the most of, that comes to mind for you?
On rural properties, I bet I've had some like nice shops that would be beyond four car garages. I had a rental property that I sold a couple years ago that had like a 24 by 40 shop with like 16 foot ceilings. Oh, so that was pretty big. Like, that was a unique one to figure out the value for.
Almost double digits there, probably.
Yeah. Well, not quite. It was but it's probably larger than a three stall. And so you could fit quite a few cars in there if you wanted to. I remember I had some tenants who had like collector cars. They'd have a bunch of collector cars in there. But the house was tiny. It made for an interesting...
They lived in the shop, probably.
Practically, yeah. They like had a TV in there, pool table. You know, they had it set up where you could tell they hung out in the shop a lot.
Had proved to be quite the adventure then when it came to putting in all the numbers.
Yeah, it was. So that was even though it was one of my own, it was a challenging one to evaluate. So we were talking about interior updates. The other thing is going to be like the age of roof, windows, siding, HVAC systems. A house with a brand new roof is going to sell for more than a house that has a roof that needs to be replaced right now. So we're going to adjust for those sort of things. And then after I complete the CMA, based on all these calculations, all the adjustments that I've made between the comps and the subject property, it's going to give me kind of a range and an estimated value. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at that price range in the MLS, and I'm going to check out all the active listings that are currently active in that price range. Are there a lot of homes for sale currently in that price range? Are there hardly any in that price range? Because if there's hardly any, you can justify going at a higher on the higher end of that range. If there's a ton of them and a lot of them are sitting around, that's where you're going to have to, you know, be a little bit lower on the price range. And that's just market conditions. I'm going to look at how are these active listings, how nice are they? How attractive are they compared to the subject property? And how are they priced compared to the subject property? Because I want my house to be more attractive than the other homes at that same exact price. Otherwise, you're going to be kind of sitting in line waiting for those other ones to sell before you.
What like factors that would play into that be like how up to date is the paint job on the exterior? Are the shingles all up to date?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And neighborhood also, like, you know, factoring in all these different things that come into the value of a home, making sure that we're priced competitively because we want all the attention on our house. We don't want to be the second best or the third best because if we're in third place, if we're the third nicest home at the price that we're at on the market and the first two sell, it's not like we're automatically going to sell next because a different home could come on the market that's nicer and that one sells. And next thing you know, we're 40 some days on market and now we're not getting very much showing activity anymore. And now we're behind the eight ball. Negotiations are going to be rough because we don't have hardly any negotiating leverage. We've staled on the market. We've kind of lost consumer confidence. That's what I don't want to happen to my sellers. So, and then the other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to see how long those active listings have been sitting as well. That's going to be an important factor. Usually, if there's hardly any on the market, they haven't been sitting very long unless they're just completely overpriced. If there's a lot of homes on the market, they could be pretty attractive and well-priced, but they still might be sitting for a while. So that's going to tell me a lot. And then I'm going to do the same thing with the pending listings. So the pending listings are homes that have accepted an offer, but they haven't closed yet. And I'm like, where are these pending listings sitting? You know, a pending listing that was put at the same exact price as what my CMA came out at. How nice is it compared to the one that we're listing? If it's not as nice, maybe I can even price it a little bit above the CMA value. Because that would tell me that the current market's going up so fast that the comps aren't reflective of the current market conditions. Does that kind of make sense?
Do you get? Yeah, I was just going to ask. Like, would you get the kind of feeling just getting a vibe for how the market's trending? Like, okay, yeah. I got a feeling just kind of just from your years of experience. Like, oh, I could probably price this higher than what I normally would, just based on the other sales going on.
Yep, 100%. Time of year matters too. Like, if we're in the fall time and we're going into the slowest time of year, the comps might indicate. The comps that sold during the springtime might be higher than what the current market demand is right now. You know, in the springtime, the homes that sold during the winter might be lower sales than what the market is going to give us right now.
So yes, less people ideally wanting to move in the winter months, maybe.
Yeah, and this isn't going to be like a $20,000 difference, but it's going to be at least some difference. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, there are more dangers to overpricing a home. Like, whenever a client, you know, I always have kind of a soft spot for my client's home. And, you know, you're like, oh, this is, you know, this is their home and it should be worth more. But you have to really put on your objective glasses and not
be impartial.
You have to be completely impartial and really look at it for what it is and help them out. Because if you accidentally overprice that home, the consequences can be big. And if you accidentally underprice it as well, you're taking a gamble. There's risks to that as well, because then if you don't get multiple offers to bid it up to where it needs to be, then you're, you know, settling it, probably selling it for less than it's worth.
I got one question on what could maybe, I'm curious if you've ever ran into any extreme like neighborhood comparisons where like one really well-kept home against another one, because I knew I knew a family friend several years back where they had just a rough time trying to sell their home because the house next to them was completely abandoned for several years. I guess it turned out the person was just using it as a tax write-off. And so they just left it abandoned until finally, like, the foundations started to cave in and they finally had to phone the city while they're trying to sell their house, just having the worst luck because, you know, it was an eyesore right next to it.
Yeah.
And then finally, once the foundation caved in, they're able to call the city and get it, hey, this is a health hazard now.
Yeah.
And they were able to bulldoze it. Have you ever ran into any extreme situations like that?
Nothing quite that extreme, but I have seen it before where, like, you know, one block of houses, they're all very well maintained on the same street, for example. You know, one block, they're all very well maintained. And then the next block, there's some apartment buildings that are poorly taken care of and some houses that are really run down. Sometimes you see it with rentals where, you know, the landlord just doesn't fix things. Mm-hmm. And that, if you are a homeowner on that street, on that block, you're kind of affected by these poorly kept homes around yours, even if you've kept yours up. And that's really important for people to take a close look at when they're buying the property. You know, if you're buying the nicest house on the street and it's perfect, but all the other houses around you mm-hmm. are in really rough shape, you know, it's unlikely that that whole thing is, you're taking a major gamble if you think that all of those are going to somehow turn themselves around by the time you're ready to sell, right? Yeah. So that's a very important thing that I will talk to buyers about when we're looking at homes. You want to see the condition that these other homes around you are in.
Make sure not to get just, obviously spend a lot of time on the property they're looking at, but make sure they have the good perspective on the surrounding.
Yeah, and that was something I kind of planned to talk about on Friday's episode too, is like, how to spot potential to add value and then how to spot potential risks, especially when it comes to neighborhoods. So I won't spoil too much, but
so people can look forward to that on Friday. But until then, John, what's the best way for people to reach out and contact you?
Yeah. My cell phone number is 701-213-5428. Check me out on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I'm posting content all the time that's valuable to home buyers, to homeowners, people who live in Grand Forks, people who want to stay on top of the Grand Forks housing market. So
you're everywhere. Actually, I've seen some of your videos pop up in the algorithms.
That's good.
Yes.
Then I'm doing the right thing.
Alrighty. Well, that concludes your Wednesday edition of the Berkshire Hathaway podcast. We'll be back with John Brodeen this coming Friday. And many thanks to producer Paul. Until this Friday at 10, have a great day and we'll see you on Friday.